The Stimulation of the Alps by Robert Louis Stevenson. To anyone who should come from a southern sanitarium to the Alps, the row of sunburned faces round the table would present the first surprise. He would begin by looking for the invalids, and he would lose his pains, for not one out of five of even the bad cases bears the mark of sickness on his face. The plump sunshine from above and its strong reverberation from below color the skin like an Indian climate. The treatment, which consists mainly of the open air, exposes even the sickliest to tan, and a tableful of invalids comes in a month or two to resemble a tableful of hunters. But although he may be thus surprised at the first glance, his astonishment will grow greater as he experiences the effects of the climate on himself. In many ways, it is a trying business to reside upon the Alps. The stomach is exercised. The appetite often languishes. The liver may at times rebel, and because you have come so far from metropolitan advantages, it does not follow that you shall recover. But one thing is undeniable, that in the rare air, clear, cold, and blinding light of Alpine winters, a man takes a certain troubled delight in his existence which can nowhere else be paralleled. He is perhaps no happier, but he is stingingly alive. It does not, perhaps, come out of him in work or exercise, yet he feels an enthusiasm of the blood unknown in more temperate climates. It may not be health, but it is fun. There is nothing more difficult to communicate on paper than this baseless ardor, this stimulation of the brain, this sterile joyousness of spirits. You wake every morning, see the gold upon the snow peaks, become filled with courage, and bless God for your prolonged existence. The valleys are but a stride to you. You cast your shoe over the hilltops. Your ears and your hearts sing. In the words of an unverified quotation from the Scotch Psalms, you feel yourself fit on the wings of all the winds to come flying all abroad. Europe and your mind are too narrow for that flood of energy. Yet it is notable that you are hard to root out of your bed, that you start forth singing, indeed, on your walk, yet are unusually ready to turn home again, that the best of you is volatile, and that although the restlessness remains till night, the strength is early at an end. With all these heady jollities, you are half conscious of an underlying languor in the body. You prove not to be so well as you had fancied. You weary before you have well begun, and though you mount at morning with the lark, that is not precisely a songbird's heart that you bring back with you when you return with aching limbs and peevish temper to your inn. It is hard to say wherein it lies, but this joy of Alpine winters is its own reward. Baseless, in a sense, it is more than worth more permanent improvements. The dream of health is perfect while it lasts, and if in trying to realize it you speedily wear out the dear hallucination, still, every day and many times a day, you are conscious of a strength you scarce possess, and a delight in living as merry as it proves to be transient. The brightness, heaven and earth conspiring to be bright, the levity and quiet of the air, the odd, stirring silence, more stirring than a tumult, the snow, the frost, the enchanted landscape, all have their part in the effect and on the memory. Tu vaux ta peine sur la tête. And yet, when you have enumerated all, you have gone no nearer to explain or even to qualify the delicate exhilaration that you feel. Delicate, you may say, and yet excessive, greater than can be said in prose, almost greater than an invalid can bear. There is a certain wine of France known in England in some gaseous disguise, but when drunk in the land of its nativity, still as a pool, clean as river water, and as heady as verse. It is more than probable that in its noble natural condition this was the very wine of Anjou, so beloved by Athos in the Musketeers. Now, if the reader has ever washed down a liberal second breakfast with the wine in question, and gone forth on the back of these delusions into a sultry, sparkling noontide, he will have felt an influence almost as genial, although strangely grosser, than this fairy titillation of the nerves among the snow and sunshine of the Alps. That also is a mode, we need not say of intoxication, but of insobriety. Thus also a man walks in a strong sunshine of the mind, and follows, smiling, insubstantial meditations. And whether he be so really clever or so strong as he supposes, in either case he will enjoy his chimera while it lasts. The influence of this giddy air displays itself in many secondary ways. A certain sort of labored pleasantry has already been recognized, and may perhaps have been remarked in these papers as a sort peculiar to that climate. People utter their judgments with a cannonade of syllables. A big word is as good as a meal to them, and the turn of a phrase goes further than humor or wisdom. by the professional writer, many sad vicissitudes have to be undergone. At first, he cannot write at all. The heart, it appears, is unequal to the pressure of business, and the brain, left without nourishment, goes into a mild decline. Next, some power of work returns to him, accompanied by jumping headaches. Last, the spring is opened, and there pours at once from his pen a world of blatant, hustling polysyllables, and talk so high as, in the old joke, to be positively offensive in hot weather. He writes it in good faith and with sense of inspiration. It is only when he comes to read what he has written that surprise and disquiet seize upon his mind. What is he to do, poor man? All his little fishes talk like whales. This yeasty inflation, this stiff and strutting architecture of the sentence, has come upon him while he slept. And it is not he, it is the Alps who are to blame. He is not, perhaps, alone, which somewhat comforts him. Nor is the ill without a remedy. Some day, when the spring returns, he shall go down a little lower in this world and remember quieter inflections and more modest language. But here, in the meantime, there seems to swim up some outline of a new cerebral hygiene, and a good time coming, when experienced advisers shall send a man to the proper measured level for the ode, the biography, or the religious tract, and a book may be found between the sea and Chimborazo, where Mr. Swinburne shall be able to write more continently, and Mr. Browning somewhat slower. Is it a return of youth, or is it a congestion of the brain? It is a sort of congestion, perhaps, that leads the invalid, when all goes well, to face the new day with such a bubbling cheerfulness. It is certainly congestion that makes night hideous with visions, all the chambers of a many-storied caravanserai haunted with vociferous nightmares, and many wakeful people come down for breakfast in the morning. Upon that theory, the cynic may explain the whole affair. Exhilaration, nightmares, pomp of tongue, and all. But on the other hand, the peculiar blessedness of boyhood may itself be but a symptom of the same complaint, for the two effects are strangely similar, and the frame of mind of the invalid upon the Alps is a sort of intermittent youth, with periods of lassitude. The fountain of Juventus does not play steadily in these parts, but there it plays, and possibly nowhere else. The End. Read by Rick Kistner for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.